And now I'd like to invite questions, any questions people might have.
Once you explain old mind and new mind, could you please elaborate on those two again? And is there some sort of transition from old mind to new mind, or it is just two different angles we are looking at the same thing? Thank you.
The truth is there is just awareness, and everything is the result, mirroring in awareness, whatsoever. And so it should be very easy to change things on a material level. But for example, if you have a bodily problem like a broken teeth, this will not help. It is only awareness, even this problem.
Is that a statement or are you asking a question? Can it help? Can it help?
So this split between material things and the final truth, that there is just awareness. Mm-hmm. And in my imagination, awareness can do as she likes. But sometimes she doesn't. You have to go to the dentist.
All this thinking about awareness, wow. thinking.
Are there indications whether I'm resting or not? We are still not sure if it's resting or not. Is there anything like a 1, 2, 3, okay, then you're in rest? Or I know that it's not a state.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything that can help me to be more sure that I'm resting?
I just had this thought, you know, about the Bible, when Christ finally gives up on the cross and he says, you know, like, thy will be done. Is that in a way a nice image to look at resting as a kind of surrender, possibly?
Okay, sure. Bud, can you sing the first line of your song, Bud Collins is a Pure Space Fan, in response to that question?
Bud Collins, when he was a baby, sitting on his mammy's knee, picked up a Bible in his little right hand, said, this book will never be for me, oh Lord.
Okay. I knew you'd understand completely. Well, is there anything else that needs to be said after that? That exclamation. One more question.
Yeah, it's as if I already know that the answer to my question is rest as fear. But I just noticed that there is uh, there is an idea around being loving and being loved and letting people have power over me. That causes me to block love. I don't know if it's a question, but it's like if you could comment on it. Because I know it's restless spirit, so he's the cure.
When it comes to understanding the nature of who we are as human beings, and not only understanding that, but decisively experiencing it as our own reality, it's very important that we have a common language that we can all understand. And it's equally important that who we are as human beings, that our fundamental reality, which is the fundamental reality of everything, not be either oversimplified or overcomplicated. So nowadays we see a lot of oversimplification and overcomplication. Overcomplication that involves endless doing, methods, practices, constant effort for someone to achieve something called the fundamental nature of reality, or whatever you might call it. And then the oversimplification is just to say, oh, everything is spontaneous consciousness. It just is as it is. It comes from nothing and it leads to nothing. It doesn't matter what you do. All conduct is uncontrived. Don't try to shape your conduct in any way. Do whatever you want to do. So these are two extremes, oversimplification and overcomplication. But wherever there is an extreme, there is no experience of the fundamental nature of reality. The fundamental nature of reality is like forever flawless sky in which there has never been an extreme anywhere. There's no way to point to any part of sky and say, oh, this is this or that is that, this is or that isn't. So the fundamental nature of our own minds, which is awareness, is that by which we know everything. And awareness is sky-like, stainless, forever empty, like infinite space. It's never been made into anything. So anything that appears within that space is also comprised of that space and is completely stainless and flawless. Now, what does this have to do with our practical daily reality? Well, what it has to do with our practical daily reality is that for most of us as human beings, we've learned something about who we are. And what we learn is basically that we have a body and a mind. So this is keeping it very simple, but not oversimplifying it, but not overcomplicating it either. So we have a mind and a body. We learn this, and we learn that our mind is within our body and that it's dependent on our body in order to be. And so we learn too that what our mind is comprised of are thoughts and emotions that register experiences of people, places, and things, including our own body-mind complex. And when we take ourselves to be that, that's a very limited way of looking at ourselves. So just in a simple way that any human being can understand, we could call that the old mind. That's a certain way of looking at things, that mind is comprised of thoughts and emotions, and that these thoughts and emotions form an identity. They form an identity of who each one of us is, and we could call that a personal identity or an individual identity. And when we believe that we are our thoughts and emotions, what goes along hand in hand with that is trying to have good thoughts and good emotions and diminish or get rid of negative thoughts and negative emotions. And so all of these things that appear within the mind for our entire life, most of us spend all of our energy exhausting ourselves through trying to sort out all these positive and negative states, to accumulate more positive states and to diminish or get rid of the negative states. And we do that in primarily two ways. One is we either avoid the negative states or we replace the negative states with a positive state. So when we do that, we perpetuate a life of being on a roller coaster ride, because we're never outside of our thoughts and emotions. We live our entire life inside our thoughts and emotions. And we believe that that's all there is, that it's only through manipulating thoughts and emotions by either avoiding them or replacing them with other thoughts and emotions that we can have a good life and be a good person and somehow achieve happiness. And we persist in this exhausting ordeal, even though it never delivers the result we're looking for. Even if we can reshape our thinking in some small way or reshape our emotions in some small way. Have you noticed the emotions and the thoughts can't be controlled? They're unmanageable, they're unpredictable, they're ceaseless, they're countless. Just when we think we have them under control, that they're managed somehow, boom, everything falls apart. And we see that there isn't any control whatsoever, but our response to that is to try to get more control. So we dive back into rearranging all the thoughts and emotions and trying to do something about them. So in this way, we spend all of our lives like a machine. We're sorting all these thoughts and emotions and trying to do something about them, just like the coin counter at the bank. Have you ever seen those coin counters? You put all the coins in there and they all fall into different slots. Well, this is how we learn to spend our life, but rather than the coins, our coins are all our thoughts and emotions that we're constantly sorting, like the coin sorting machine at the bank. And so, you know, when we first hear about awareness, it might sound good, but it might also sound implausible or unreachable, or what is this? It must be somewhere other than where I am, because I don't experience this or I don't feel anything about this whatsoever. But awareness has never been anywhere than right here. Awareness itself is the origin of this point of view of the mind. So the mind is actually comprised of awareness, and the body is comprised of awareness too. And the body and the mind and all other thoughts and emotions, in a simple way, can just be looked at as points of view appearing within the all-encompassing pure view of awareness. And it doesn't really matter what that point of view is. They're all equal. Whether it's a personal identity or a dog or a cat or a tree or an ashram or a monk or a construction worker on the highway or a bread baker or someone parenting or whatever it is, all these points of view of personal identity are equal. And all the thoughts and emotions are equal too. So no matter what it is that we've learned about how things are divided up into positive and negative, our attempts to accumulate more positive has never led to anything that could even come close to being described as well-being, not only for ourselves as individuals, but for our species as well. So this is a very limited way of looking at who we are. We've decided that all these thoughts and emotions mean something in and of themselves, and for many of us, we've never examined the thoughts and emotions beyond that. But when we look into these thoughts and emotions, we can look into them in a very simple way, or we'll just call them points of view. We'll look into all these points of view at once, the point of view of a personal identity and all the other points of view. Now, all these points of view, no matter what they are, they have never been in any kind of sequence of time whereby there can be determined causes that are related to results in any way. So everything that appears within awareness appears as a totally seamless, naturally present, non-dual expanse that has never been made into anything. It's never been divided into anything. It's never been divided into sequences of time. It's never had a location or address. In other words, it's never been located anywhere. It can't be demonstrated. And everything whatsoever that appears within that expanse is that expanse. And as it is that expanse, it's all timelessly free. It doesn't matter what it is. So if we start to attribute positive and negative labels to things and give them some kind of meaning, as though they have a nature that's independent from awareness, that exists in and of itself, that has some kind of substantiality that can be shown about it, then we destine ourselves to a life where we base everything about ourselves and our life on endless descriptions. And when we look into these points of view and really ask about them, whatever they are, we can really see, if we look closely, that they have no independent nature. Now, how can we establish that? Well, first of all, with any point of view, in order to find its authentic meaning, it has to be looked at deeply. We have to say, well, you know, is there actually something that has a location, that dwells somewhere, that can be shown to exist in its own right? And so we could take the point of view of a personal identity, for example. We could say, well, okay, where is this personal identity located? And how can we demonstrate that there is someone dwelling there? And when we do that, we can say, well, okay, well, where is this personal identity located, this point of view of a personal identity? And we can go through all the different parts of the body. Is it located in the skin? Well, no, we can't really say that it's located there. We can't find it there anywhere. And no one has ever been able to do this. Scientists may postulate about where an identity is located, but no one has ever come up with a definitive theory about that. So, two, we can look in the brain. Well, is the personal identity located there? Again, just theories. We can't really say that there is someone dwelling in the brain. And we can go through all the other organs of the body, too, whatever they are, the heart, the eyes, the bones, whatever it might be. And we find that nowhere can we really say that there is a personal identity that is located somewhere, that is dwelling anywhere, and that at some point will come to an end. So we start to see all these things. Well, maybe this personal identity doesn't have such an independent nature as I once thought it did. And as we examine it more, we could take this personal identity and put it under an electron microscope, and we'd see that, you know, whatever it was just a bunch of electrons. And even if we brought in each of your parents and showed them those electrons, they wouldn't say, oh, that's my little girl or that's my little boy. They wouldn't have any idea what it was. And then if we took all of those electrons and threw them in a linear particle accelerator, boom, you know, there would be nothing but space. So, you know, what we see when we look into this idea of there being a personal identity that's located somewhere, that was born, dwells for a time, and then ceases, what we see is that this personal identity is comprised of space. And so when we see all these things, what is seeing? What is seeing? Well, it's awareness that's seeing everything. It's awareness that's doing everything. The flawless knower and doer of everything is awareness. So it's awareness that subsumes space within itself. Awareness and space are absolutely synonymous. If we look for awareness in ourselves, we can't really find it anywhere. It's not located anywhere. It's not locatable or definable. As I said earlier, it's never had an address. And when we look at the personal identity in this way, we can then apply the same method of reason and logic to any other label. Anything we come up with in the dictionary, or even the words that aren't in the dictionary, all these labels, we can see that they really don't have an independent nature, that the labels, whatever they are, they're vivid appearances of forever empty awareness. They're vivid appearances of forever stainless, flawless awareness. And they've never been anything other than that. Unless we know these two aspects of all appearances, we'll stay locked into being a sorting machine of our thoughts and emotions all our life. We'll only see the dictionary definition, the label of the appearance, but we won't know anything about its underlying nature, its authentic meaning, and the implications of that. Everything that, no matter what it is that it appears, has no independent nature. It's never been substantial in its own right. It's never had an individual or personal identity of any kind. And even if we just look into something mentally and we come to that definitive conclusion, we feel some relief based on that. It's just like, wow, I knew there was something wrong with the way things were going here. And just this simple, very simple approach that anyone could understand, it gives a sense of relief, like, wow, there's something more. There's something more than what I've been looking at or what I've taken to be true about myself. And so, we can then look at the way we've been thinking about our mind as the old mind, and then we can kind of see that the old mind and this new mind we're discovering aren't two. That the awareness that is the basis of everything, it isn't dependent on anything, as we just attempted to prove through reason and logic. We see that awareness doesn't depend on anything. It doesn't depend on these ideas about the body in order to be. It doesn't depend on ideas about the mind in order to be. It doesn't depend on all the dictionary labels in order to be. Awareness simply is. So with that proof in our hearts and this relief that is so palpable in that understanding, then we can begin to embrace the implications of that and its broader scope and the decisive experience of that in our daily life. And it's this relief itself that is what awareness is. So just this underlying relief that is the basis of every appearance, that is completely it. Relaxed, easygoing, carefree, and at ease no matter what appears. And in a human being, that the simplicity of that experience is just relaxed awareness that is demonstrated as complete perceptual openness in all experience. So it's as simple as that, complete perceptual openness in all experience, rather than the need to focus intently on everything and try to sort it out, saying this one is positive, that one is negative, this one I need to get rid of, that one I need to hang on to, that fruitless, exhausting task. Because the good things we can never hold on to, and the bad things we can never get rid of, so they just keep coming, no matter what they are, because, nothing can be done with nothing. Nothing can be done with pure space. There's nothing that can be done about it. So you see, when we just understand that relief and begin to just relax as its basis, then we see that all these appearances, that we've never needed to do anything about them, all these points of view that appear are like a mirage. They're like a line drawn in water. They're like the flight path of a bird in the sky. They vanish naturally in and of themselves. They've never been made into anything, so nothing needs to be done about them. Whatever they are, they're free in their own place. They're their own undoing. Just like a knot in a snake undoes itself, so too all points of view are their own undoing. As they already are awareness, nothing needs to be done about them to make them into awareness. And in the direct encounter with point of view, it is an awareness looking at a point of view. It's awareness that is the essence of that point of view. It's awareness as whatever appears. So there's never been any separation anywhere. There's no middle figure, so to speak, in between awareness and points of view, like a personal identity, an ego, a personality type, or any of these other things that are talked about, a pain body, where we have to work on this ego, personality type, pain body, whatever we might call it, individual identity, and we have to smash it and get rid of it in order to see awareness. The personal identity and awareness aren't two, so you see there's nothing to get rid of, there's nothing to destroy, there's nothing to annihilate, there's nothing to change in any way, there's nothing that need be done about any appearance, whatever it is. One instant it's personal identity, the next instant it's another person, the next instant it's all the trees or the ganga or whatever it is, but it's all completely perceptually open, it's all timelessly free, it's all wide open and spacious like the vast expanse of sky. Nothing needs to be done about it whatsoever. It's only when we think that something needs to be done about what appears that we get distracted by that. And it's just the simplicity of this distraction of getting involved in elaboration and the stories about what appears that we are completely unable to relax. That's all. It's as simple as that. You know, there's never been a story that needs to be told about anything. And the compulsion to make things right, to sort things out and say this is good and this is evil, it's just a compulsion. We could call it the ultimate addiction, really. The ultimate addiction to point of view, because beyond all these attributions of good and bad, right and wrong, this and that, beyond all that and including all that is wisdom. So you see, this is the choice we make. We choose between living a life as a sorting machine of good and evil and wisdom. That's basically the choice that's made. To just relax as the wisdom awareness that is the essence of everything, that includes everything, that is synonymous with love and energy, that is potently beneficial immediately to oneself and to everyone else. We choose between that and living our life as a robot, a sorting machine of all the points of view. And the simplicity of the decisive experience of that is just the complete ease of all appearances. All appearances are already completely at ease, and that's what wisdom is. Just that. It isn't any big deal. That by which we know we are naturally present is awareness, and awareness is wisdom. So the fact, the very straightforward fact that we know we are, that is wisdom, that is awareness. It's as simple as that. It's not some kind of big deal like a blown out state where the mind is never has another thought or emotion and you can't move or anything like that. Awareness is the great naturalness, the great naturalness of everything as it is, the great naturalness that is completely unmade and can never be arrived at through descriptive words, even metaphoric approximation of any kind. It can't be demonstrated in any way, yet it is so vivid in its natural presence. There isn't a human being anywhere on earth that can say, I am not aware. So this is what unites us, this one awareness, that by which everyone knows they are aware, and there's never been any kind of ruling class or pecking order within that, like some people are aware and they have the opportunity to be aware but no one else does. You know, it's never been that way, but those are absurd, pretentious notions that have never applied to anything. You know, they're just more labels, more points of view that establish split and division where there's never been a split or division. Everyone, no matter who they are, is equally born as awareness, and at the same time equally unborn. So all these ideas of division, born and unborn, and all these extreme ways in which things are talked about nowadays, they've never been two. The born and the unborn are not two. The personal identity and that which has never known a personal identity are not two. There's no need to contrive things in any way. No need whatsoever to contrive things in any way, to enter into any kinds of extreme thinking or effortful thinking or exhausting conversations about what awareness is. Because awareness can't be characterized in words. Well, what is there to talk about? There are certain words that are like a sword with a diamond blade these words cut through everything, and they show the nature of reality just as it is, and they show it in a very definitive way where it's impossible to hide out from it. If you feel you've been hiding out from awareness, it becomes impossible to hide out. You know, just this ease of being that's present right here, where it's impossible to really get into any stories or think about anything, even if you try. Well, that's what awareness is. And that awareness is always naturally present. It's not related to any special circumstances. It's completely unconditioned. So that whatever appears, it just is. You know, if I jump up and down and shout and act like a maniac, or sit here in a full lotus, or anything in between, it's all timelessly free. You know, it doesn't matter. Not it matters not. Awareness is always completely unaffected. Now, this has immediate benefit to us when we can just... The only way to really get familiar with awareness, really there are only two approaches whereby many, many people realize who they are. And I've seen this over the course of 25 years. It's, you could say it's a law. One is that just by hearing about who we are, because we already know who we are, conviction dawns. Now, to all of us thinking types, it just seems impossible that conviction could dawn with certainty about anything such as this. It just seems like we're going to have to do a lot of thinking. We're going to have to do a whole lot of thinking or meditating or something, you know. We're going to have to put a lot of effort into it. If we could graduate from high school, then we know we're going to have to put at least that much effort into realizing awareness. So if we hear, oh, well, certainty will dawn just by hearing about it, some people think, oh, that's impossible. Well, check it out and see, you know. We already know who we are, even if that isn't in our thinking currently. So many times just by hearing about who we are in an authoritative, convincing way, the diamond blade sword, then we just see all of a sudden, wow, you know, this is very clear. I had these other ideas, but I can see that they're just ideas, they're just points of view. They don't really have anything to say about who I am. And the other is to rest as awareness for short moments, repeated many times until it becomes spontaneous or automatic. And this is very simple, in that just resting with whatever appears, and resting as awareness, just allowing that ease of being, that's all it means. It doesn't mean getting into any kind of a state that's split off from what's appearing. It's just resting as everything that's appearing. no matter what it is, for short moments repeated many times, rather than getting distracted by what appears, just to allow the natural ease of awareness to be as it is. And maybe initially that might be like a cat watching a mouse or a tiger watching its prey. There's the tiger watching of awareness, watching the prey of point of view. but that doesn't matter. Don't even think about it. It's not worth thinking about. Just continue to enjoy life and be at ease. And the more that occurs, the more there will be no separation. Where there seemed to be separation, it will naturally vanish, and no one will even be able to say how it vanished. So there's nothing to think about, worry about, to get into any kind of turmoil about. There's nothing to do and there's nothing to change. So if you meditate, that's fine. Just relax and allow all of what appears to appear as it will, without any need to concentrate on anything or get into any kind of special state. And or if you're not meditating in that sense, enjoy the ultimate meditation of complete ease and rest, the meditative stability that's guaranteed in every appearance in a completely uncontrived way. And then quite naturally you'll see that where there seemed to be separation, there isn't. And where there seemed to be a split or a division between all the appearances, that, wow, somehow it disappeared. Well, it's never been there, so it hasn't really disappeared or appeared, not either one. And so this, in a very simple way, it's just complete perceptual openness in all experience, complete ease, no need to cling to anything or push it away. The relaxed openness of all experience, the relaxed indescribability of whatever appears, the natural presence of awareness that's inseparable from whatever appears, and the indivisibility of that, just a single non-dual expanse, but without any need to think about it or toy with it or write a philosophy book about it or any other contrived activity. It's just so simple who we are. It couldn't be more simple. That by which we know we are is timelessly free. So we wouldn't even know we're here, that we're present without awareness. So, you know, where would we be looking for it? If we say, oh, I'm looking for awareness, or I'm headed to some kind of destination of timeless freedom, then, you know, we're stepping away because it's what's looking. It's what's looking, that's where awareness is. What's looking? And what's looking is a natural resource of indestructible wisdom. So if we're looking for natural resources, it's important to look for the ultimate natural resource first and rely on that. Then maybe we can solve all of our other problems about having exhausted the natural resources of the earth. So you see, when we rely on wisdom, then we're of benefit to ourselves. And we see this in a very immediate way, because the things that once bothered us and really got us going with our stories, like fear or anger or jealousy or pride or non-recognition of awareness or desire or whatever it might be, we see that somehow we're not affected by these things anymore. Where we used to have a story, there isn't a story any longer. And for most, this comes about gradually. So rather than just jumping into the reactive conduct of whatever it is, we find that we're not distracted any longer by the anger, that it no longer has the juice or power that it once seemed to have, that it's just relaxed in its own place. It vanishes in and of its own accord, like the flight path of the bird in the sky. And, you know, that is extremely powerful, because where we once attributed cause and effect I'm angry because, or I'm jealous because, or whatever it was, we see that there's something about us that's beyond causation. That we saw all these cause and effects, but where are they now? Where are they now that there's just relaxed awareness? We see that the uncaused and the caused are not two, the unaffected and the affected are not two. And in this we find complete relief in, of, as, and through everything that appears. So this is, it's quite an adventure. And it's an adventure with no destination. It's very important, it's urgently important to not see awareness as a destination, because no matter how long we live, there'll just be the complete perceptual openness of whatever appears, which is not a destination. It's already naturally present as everything, so to see it as a destination is always to be off the mark. There's neither a destination nor anyone going there. Both the destination and the one going there have no independent nature. They have no nature independent of awareness. So my heartfelt advice is just to relax and enjoy the ease of your own being, that we usually learn to see things in one of two ways, either a materialist way where we say that things exist in their own right, that they do have an independent nature, our thoughts, emotions, and experiences, such as other people, places, and things, that all these things have an independent nature. Or we learn that nothing exists, the nihilist point of view, that everything comes from nothing and leads to nothing. But either of these are extremes, and in forever flawless sky-like awareness, there aren't any extremes anywhere. So awareness doesn't take up the extreme of things existing or the extreme of things not existing. And in that is wisdom, complete wisdom. When we're relaxed as the wisdom at the basis of everything, then we find incredible solutions to our own personal issues and concerns, and we find incredible wisdom solutions to the things facing our species as well. And, the only way we can tap into that resource of wisdom is to get acquainted with it. It's inseparable from awareness. That's where it's located. And in that, we learn all kinds of things about life that we never knew were possible. So, you know, it's up to us. It's up to you and it's up to me. Together, there's nothing we cannot be. You can really count on this, too. If you're seeking some kind of split-off state of emptiness, no self, non-conceptual states, impartiality, neutrality, spontaneous consciousness, all these things that are talked about these nowadays, they're bliss, clarity. If you're seeking anything, just stop. Because the seeking has no independent nature, the seeker has no independent nature, and the sought has no independent nature. So just relax, completely relax. Awareness is not a state. It's inseparable from whatever appears. It's never taken up in an extreme anywhere, not non-conceptuality and not conceptuality either. There's nothing to do about whatever appears. One moment there might be a sublime realization, the next moment a mundane realization, but in the expanse of awareness, everything is equal and even. It doesn't matter what it's called, mundane, sublime, what you can be guaranteed of is that it doesn't have an independent nature, and that the law of impermanence applies to it. So even if you try to hold on to it, you won't be able to. Even if you try to hold on to a sublime state at some point, at some point you'll die. So, you know, where's the sublime state then? In awareness, we're prepared for whatever appears. All of our life, all throughout our life and at death. So all these things that, you know, we all have these kind of hidden points of view, secret points of view, like everyone else will die, but I will not. Somehow I'm going to fend it off, or others might get terribly ill, but I won't. I won't age and I won't die. And so all of these things, no matter what they are, all of these points of view, they're vivid appearances of emptiness. When we gain familiarity with awareness, whatever appears, it's an appearance of that. And the more familiar we are with awareness, the more we see that there is no separation between anything. There's no separation between happiness and suffering. And in this lack of separation between happiness and suffering, there's consummate well-being, super complete well-being, super complete bliss.
If some people relax, but they're not ready to get to be aware, what they probably do is that they fall into laziness. Mm-hmm. And that is not really a good state of awareness. Mm-hmm. So how can people not fall into laziness?
Mm-hmm. Laziness, like agitation or any other description, is just a point of view. So most important is to relax as flawless awareness. See all as flawless awareness in a completely uncontrived way for short moments many times until it's clear that all is flawless awareness. And in that is tremendous energy. Wisdom awareness is synonymous with tremendous energy. When there's no cage of labels any longer, when the confines of all these points of view are seen through, then there's nowhere to take up residence as anything, you know, laziness or someone being lazy or anything else. Everything is just completely open and spacious. So initially, if laziness is one of your points of view that you like to drift around in or whatever it is, and when that appears, just to rest as awareness. Everything you need to know about laziness or anything else is best known from wisdom awareness. Once there's a story, say laziness comes up, and then there's the story about the laziness. Oh, if I'm lazy like this, I'll never get anything done. I should be doing this and I should be doing that. Then the next thing you're thinking about the past. I've always been lazy. When I was growing up, my mom and dad, they said, "You're lazy." And, oh, maybe it's their fault I'm lazy. So, this is called the proliferation of points of view. Distraction by points of view. But when that point of view of laziness appears and there's just the ease of awareness rather than the story, then we start to see how these points of view proliferate and resolve. The stirring of the points of view and awareness are inseparable. But if we go off into the story, then that's impossible, isn't it? Do you like to be lazy? Or were you talking about someone else?
I was thinking that it's very difficult to get away with the illusion that, sorry if I use another terminology, I'm used to that. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to get away of illusion if you don't have a clear way on how to do it. Because you want to say, okay, I want to be aware. I want to live in perfect bliss, perfect awareness,
yeah.
And God, the infinite, whatever. But if you're stuck in a point of view, to get out of that, you need something that will make you transcend that at some point.
That would be awareness.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so you're asking about the practical details. Well, how can I move from here to there, so to speak?
Yes. I mean, there must be a method or...
Well, there, pardon?
Sorry, I said there must be.
Awareness is the method and the result. Awareness is both the method and the result. Now, you're a thinking man, I can see that. So, you see, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that thinking. It's awareness, too. But if you get all wrapped up in the thinking... Now, one of the things I've stated so far is that there are two ways to go about it. Now, even for a thinking person, you can just keep showing up here, and conviction will dawn in you about who you are in a very palpable, tangible way. And then the other is to couple that, or just on its own, to rest as awareness for short moments, repeated many times. Now, implied in what you said, what I heard was that and what I see is that, you know, you're just wondering, well, how about all these points of view I have by which I'm blindsided? So, you know, I'm resting as awareness for a little while, and then all of a sudden, without even knowing what happened, I'm completely blindsided. Do you understand that term, blindsided? Completely distracted by points of view. For days, you don't even think about awareness or remember that there is awareness or anything like that. So these are practical questions. These are things we all want to know about, and it's an important question. Well, in the Great Freedom Teaching, we have three series of teachings, and one of them is called Everyday Awareness, the 12 Inquiries. So that sounds very practical, doesn't it? Well, you know, many of us, the reason we're blindsided by our points of view is that we don't even know what our points of view are. They're so ingrained that they appear and somehow we're totally distracted by them and we don't even know how it happens. So in Everyday Awareness, the 12 Inquiries, this is looked into clearly. All points of view are seen through. Not with some kind of generalized philosophy that's supposed to apply to everyone, but through the coupling of that with really looking at your own points of view. So you know what they are, and then when they come up, you're not blindsided by them any longer. And it's very, very powerful. A very, very powerful teaching. All of the Great Freedom teachings are extremely powerful. So these are formal written teachings, as well as oral teachings that are given. And would anyone here like to share their experience of the 12 inquiries and seeing through points of view?
Very, very gentle process. Lots of things was just obvious. It was not that it was the strongest confrontation in my life with my deepest points of views. But then it just became obvious. By text you're reading, by questions that are asked, and by this, it feels like for your everyday life, for me, that whatever they come, I know now where I have my points of view, where I avoid this living as awareness, and at the same time I know now that it's up to me, that I have the responsibility to choose in every second if I want to go on into the points of views again. Or if I just see, no, I don't need to go into that area. So it's very practical, and very clear, and very gentle, and still very, very profound.
Thank you. Kathy? Do you want to sit up here? Mm-hmm.
I did the 12 inquiries 1.5 years ago, and yeah, it was amazing. I was looking for something to solve all my emotions, thinking, and everything what involves with the mind. And I tried very hard with psychology and with meditation and with all kinds of philosophies to try to fix everything what's going on in myself and trying to reach something. And with the 12 inquiries, it was amazing. I could see that everything, whatever arises in myself, emotions, thoughts, circumstances, that all arises as awareness. So that was a direct experience of myself. And I could see that what I was looking for in trying to rearrange my points of view. I know using that terminology is trying to rearrange emotions, thoughts, or my circumstances to find freedom, to find happiness, that was always in a way running around in a circle. And to cut through that searching for peace or bliss or whatever I was looking for, instead of looking it in that circle, in the emotions, in the thoughts, in my circumstances, I could cut through that, and what was there was that with total ease and peace as everything. Nothing excluded, so it was not trying to arrange them, yet everything was in whatever was happening. And that was, so to say, the end of all searching. The total thought of searching in psychology, in meditation, or spiritual things. And yeah, and now after, just it gets greater and greater in my experience. Resting as awareness just gets more and more great, although it's always complete in every moment. Oh. And that's a direct experience. So in a way, that's just the ease in every single moment. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very grateful.